And we will open a public hearing. Marjorie?
On Senate Bill 145.
On Senate Bill 145. Thank you.
No problem. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 145 declares public health policy of Oregon and creates the Interim Public Health Assessment and Improvement Advisory Committee. This is similar to House Bill 2267 that made its way through part of the House last session.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Higginson, would you like to come up, please? Jeff Davis, we can join you. Yes, thank you.
And I do have testimony that's being passed out. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Grant Higginson. I'm the State Public Health Officer with the Department of Human Services, and I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 145, which we actually asked to be introduced. And Senate Bill 145 basically does two things. First, it puts into Oregon law a nationally recognized framework outlining the role of public health. And then the second thing that it does is it sets up an interim committee to perform an assessment of the state's public health capacity. Uh-huh. So first, talking about public health framework, it's now been 15 years since the Institute of Medicine came out with their landmark report, the Future of Public Health. And in that report, they pointed out a very interesting paradox, that while public health can be accredited with much of the improvements of health status over the last century, that public health remains still poorly understood, undervalued, and underfunded. Public health, as we talked about last week, deals with preventing disease. It deals with looking at populations as our patient. It deals with using epidemiology and data analysis as the way that we make policies. And one of the characteristics of dealing with health issues this way is that it tends to make us invisible. By preventing disease, the only time you hear about public health is when those things break down. And one of the things that the Institute of Medicine said was that if we don't pay attention to the public health system, what we're going to see in the future is more and more breakdowns, more communicable diseases, and an excess burden of chronic diseases. And one thing that I would like to do at this point is, again, thank the chair and the committee for taking some real leadership and taking a look at public health issues. We're very happy that you're hearing this bill today, and want to again thank you very much for allowing the public health system to come and talk to you last week. But back to the public health framework, Senate Bill 145 first in Section 1 simply clarifies the role in Oregon statute by clearly stating what the different components of public health system are, saying that at the state level we need to have a state agency that's responsible for oversight, coordination, and providing technical assistance to local health departments, and that at the local level we need to have local health departments providing those services. That's the way historically things have been done in the state, and we think that that is very appropriate. It then goes on to talk about the fact that we need to see public health as much broader than that, and need to involve the business community, the healthcare community, the general public, health professional organizations, etc., in looking at public health. And then finally, in this descriptive section, it talks about what the 10 public health essential services are. And I have not included that in the testimony, but in an attachment I provided some work that was done as follow-up to the Institute of Medicine report that goes into the 10 essential services of public health. And I did want to mention that last session, as was mentioned by the committee administrator, a bill that was very similar to this section of the bill was heard over in the House. And at that point, there were some concerns raised by some individuals that they were afraid that this might be creating unfunded mandates, or that it might be requiring healthcare facilities or systems or healthcare providers individually to be providing services that they might not want to provide. And so consequently, in Section 1, Subsection 5, we clearly state that this really is just a bill to look, or at least this section of the bill, is just a bill to look at a policy framework for public health, and it in no ways requires anyone to run any unfunded program, and it does not in any way require anyone to provide any specific service that they're not wanting to provide.
Dr. Higginson, let me be clear about what you just said. The purpose of this section or this bill is not to require, for instance, a hospital that does not provide abortion services to provide abortion services. Is that the intent of this bill or not the intent of this bill?
Mr. Chair, the way you phrased it was correct. The bill here is in no way intending to mandate anyone to provide specific services.
Abortion services specifically.
Abortion services specifically, or any other services as well. But clearly, it does not require anyone to be providing abortion services in this bill. That this bill is only taking a look at what we want to use as a framework for public health policy, and that other. Reproductive health services are dealt with in other statutes. This does not have anything to do with those other statutes. Anything that's dealing with abortion or other reproductive health issues would be dealt with in those statutes.
Okay, so the legislative intent of this bill does not deal with providing abortion services.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
In that same light, it just refers to unfunded. Why don't you put down any programs instead of unfunded programs?
Mr. Chair and Senator Fisher, I thought anyway that we were including that in the first part of the sentence where we're talking about that no individual or agency would have to provide specific health services. The issue about unfunded mandates is a slightly different issue in that particularly counties are concerned whenever we're passing bills that we might be asking them to do things where there are no resources.
Where do you say that now? I didn't quite follow you on that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, in Section 1, Subsection 5, nothing in this section may be construed to require an individual or an agency to provide specific health services. That I would read that, Senator, to mean that if there was a program that was requiring services, that this bill is not saying that they have to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Grant, where is agency? Where is that defined at?
It's on, Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, it is on page 2, line 8.
No, where is it? Where is the word agency defined? It says nothing in the section may be construed to require an individual or an agency. What does an agency mean? What is an agency for the purpose of this bill? Is that a hospital, a health clinic, a health facility, a nonprofit? What is it?
And Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, that is not, I do not see a definition in that, and that's something we could easily clarify if that would be of benefit for the committee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But my feeling was that, I mean, basically here we are talking about hospitals, health systems, and other health facilities. And local health departments as well.
Yes.
Now, and I think some of the concern about these issues has more to do with there being a potential cause of action or a right to sue based on language in a bill like this that would give a cause of action. Is the intent to grant language strong enough to give someone a cause of action to kind of hang their hat on and say this bill says you've got to do X and therefore we think we know what the legislature meant here?
And Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, the purpose of the bill is to provide a philosophical framework for how we look at public health, and it is not to provide someone with the kind of action that you're suggesting could possibly be.
Could you rephrase your answer in terms of what the intent of the bill is, or what it is not? The intent of the bill is not to what? We want to go on the record for what the intent of this bill does.
Right. And Mr. Chair, the intent of the bill, well, there's two pieces, but the intent of the first piece, which is to adopt this framework for how we look at public health in the state of Oregon. It is a philosophical framework that is based on nationally recognized work that's been done on the essential services of public health to help guide policymakers when they're making decisions about public health.
Okay.
It is not in any way meant to be a blueprint for for telling people how to specifically provide services or what services they need to provide, that those specifics are dealt with in other parts of the statute. And what this is only trying to do is provide that philosophical framework for the state legislature in order to help make with policy decisions.
Senator Mask.
Again, for clarification, on line 3, page 2, subsection D, it says ensuring that quality public health care, health services are provided to community, which includes enforcing laws and rules. That's pretty strong language. Help me understand a little bit what the intent is there. I mean, this is a philosophical statement, but we're actually saying that we're ensuring that quality public health services are, in fact, provided. It doesn't say to the extent practicable or allowed under law or to the extent that they're funded or not. And enforcing laws and rules, which is fairly strong language. So.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, if you'll take a look at the attachment at the back, Public Health in America, that is where a lot of the description of what's in the bill came from. A lot of the descriptive language comes directly from this work. And as you can see, this is something that was adopted by the American Public Health Association, Association of School and Public Health, Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, Environmental Council of the States, by the Centers for Disease Control, National Association of City and County Health Officials. This is some national work that was based on first the Institute of Medicine report and then trying to more clearly define what public health is. And one of the essential public health services you'll see about midway down there is to enforce laws and regulations that protect health and ensure safety. And I think if you look through our statutes, you would see that we do have a number of responsibilities where we do have to enforce laws and regulations. We are responsible for licensing healthcare facilities. We are responsible for licensing and following up on drinking water programs, on radiation protection, on emergency medical services systems and providers. So that is one of the roles that we have. And when the legislature is looking at what we should be providing in the way of public health, I would hope you would continue to say that enforcing specific laws and statutes and regulations that are provided for in other statutes is a role that you would like public health to play in the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Clarification. I would not disagree with the authority of the agency to enforce existing laws, et cetera. But I do get a little bit more concerned when you read on and it says, linking people to needed health services, facilitating the provision of health services when they are otherwise unavailable. What does that mean? Because it almost implies that you have the force of law and or rule to provide or to potentially force someone to provide services where it would not otherwise be available. And I have a second question after that. Related to that.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, again, it is more of a philosophical statement saying that when there are cases where services are not being adequately provided by the private sector, that is a time where public health should look at, is it reasonable for us to step up and take a role in playing a direct service provider role? That actually has been an issue that has been somewhat contentious in other discussions. The only state that I'm aware of that has adopted a similar approach and come up with language similar to this is Texas. And in Texas, they specifically took that ending statement out just for exactly the reasons that you're raising. But again, it's a philosophical statement that we might take on that role when it is appropriate, but not to say that we necessarily have to. And a good example is, we provide all rabies testing at the state public health lab. I mean, it makes sense for us to do that as one centralized laboratory rather than having that be spread out around the private side where you would not have the same number of cases to be able to become competent.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, again, so I understand, I think, what you said. So would it be the intent of the agency, your agency, that if there are not services otherwise provided, those services are inadequate, then would the state be responsible for paying for or providing those services? Or is it kind of getting back to this, are we going to compel someone to do something they otherwise would not choose to do?
Right. And Mr. Chair and Senator Minnis, the way I read this bill, it would not give us the authority to compel anybody to provide the service, and it would not give us independent authority to start doing something assuming that it was going to be paid for. that is really enabling language that we would be able to look at those services, and if we could make a case for funding new services, that we would be able to provide those services. But I do not read the bill to say that it would allow us to simply do that and hold the state responsible for funding.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Would you be offended if we had language in there that said that if there were health services otherwise unavailable, it would be the state's responsibility to either provide or fund those? In other words, it's our, instead of an unfunded mandate on nonprofits or local governments, that it's our, it becomes our responsibility. You have to bring that question back to the legislature. The legislature has to then decide how to fund that or to fund it. So I'm not sure exactly what the relationship is here, right, with this philosophical statement and what's actually done in the field or would be done in the field.
Right. And Mr. Chair, Senator Minnesota, if you're suggesting we object to language that said, and to provide those services if approved by the state legislature or Board of County Commissioners, I would not have any objection to that.
Right. I guess I'm trying to say that it ultimately comes back to the state. I mean, I wouldn't want any unfunded mandates on local government. I mean, I wouldn't even want you to imply that they're going to have to pick up and provide a service without coming back to us and saying it's your responsibility.
Right. And Mr. Chair and Senator Minnis, the only problem I would have with that is that local health departments and local boards of county commissioners are their own autonomous government.
And
if they were decided, right, if they would decide that they wanted to fund something,
right,
in addition to what the state was willing to provide, they should be able to do that, and I would not want to do anything in here that would compromise that.
And, Doctor, I agree. I would not want that to be impeded either, but as long as it's on their own motion and they're making the decision, we're not compelling them to provide something. That if there is an additional cost, an additional service that we recognize as not being provided, come back to the legislature, and the legislature reviews that and then decides whether or not we do or don't.
And Mr. Chair, sir, in a minute, if I'm understanding you, I believe that we're in agreement, and in fact, that's why we tried to put in the Section 5 that this in no way compelled people to do unfunded programs. And that has been an issue raised by the Conference of Local Health Officials and Association of Oregon Counties, and one that we agree with.
Have we adequately established legislative intent by this conversation?
Mr. Chair, I believe so.
Sure.
Okay. So
I want to caution you on the issue of legislative intent.
Yes.
Since the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and Chair of the Judiciary Committee has given us this lecture on several occasions. They look at the plain meaning of the words written in the law first. If the plain meaning is unambiguous, then it is what it is, and it says what it says. If it is ambiguous, then they have the privilege of then turning to legislative intent. According to the Chief Justice in his conversation with the Judiciary Committees, they will look at the record established by the carriers of the bill on both the Senate and the House side. If those two speeches are substantially the same, then that carries weight with a court. It is very rare that they get to the level of a committee and committee discussion to actually establish legislative intent. So if the purpose of the conversation is to establish legislative intent, I would encourage that whomever the carrier of this bill is, that these statements be made clearly on the floor of the Senate, and likewise encouraged to be repeated on the House side. If not, other than that, then we go in and we clarify the language in the bill to say exactly what we mean.
Okay, and thank you very much. And I do appreciate your questions, because if there is ambiguity, we should try to deal with that. And I don't intend to have a work session on this bill today. There are other amendments that are still yet to come, but we do need to fully explore all of these seeming ambiguities in. Now, you will make some definitions. You will include definitions in the...
Right. Yes, we will, Mr. Chair. And there is a second part to the bill, too, that I won't get to.
Could we just continue on to this vein just a moment? I draw your attention, Grant, to the 145-1 amendment and the number 5, line 2 through line 5.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, I'm sorry, but I don't have a copy of those amendments.
That kind of draws us to a little pause here, doesn't it?
Here.
Okay. Do we have copies? Do we all have copies?
Of Dash 1, I do.
Okay.
Well, we have a new system back here now, don't we?
While we're waiting for him to have a chance to look at that, I wanted to say to Senator Minnis that I've tried for years to stay away from judiciary committees, and for a while there, I thought we were in one.
Sorry.
Notwithstanding, I do appreciate the conversation that we had, though, because I think...
I understand. I just want to point out what, if any objection, he has to that wording.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Chair and Senator Fisher,
My question was, what, if any, objection do you have to using that wording in measure in that fifth section?
Right. And since Chair Morissette and Senator Fisher, I mentioned that this bill was discussed last session, and this amendment was suggested last session, and we discussed it at that time, and we referred to this as a conscience clause, and we at last session ran this by our legislative council, and our council was afraid that if language like this was inserted, that could be construed to affect other parts of our statute, and our council, and I agree with this, was very concerned that we did not want to see that happen. But because of this language that we had suggested as amendment, that is why we came up with subsection 5 of section 1, saying that in no way were we trying to force health care providers with this policy framework to provide any specific services.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Fisher.
Having been the operator of a facility that refused to partake in assisted suicide situations, I have some real concerns about making doubly sure that people aren't forced to do something. When you say linking people to services and things like that, if it means taking somebody out of Roseburg to Eugene to help get something that's going on in Eugene in practice, I guess that's fine. If you're not asking me to refer somebody to there, if you're not asking somebody else to be a part of that process, as much as I don't agree with it, I guess that I don't object to you doing that. But I, by the same token, know what happens when we pass legislation where there is some gray area, and oftentimes it becomes a huge burden to somebody to try to defend themselves then from a position they're put in, and I just personally don't have any desire to put someone there.
And Chair Morissette, Senator Fisher, and again, the intent of this section of the bill is not to put people, not to put health care providers or owners of facilities into that position, and those kind of issues, like with the Death with Dignity Act, I mean, they should specifically be dealt with in that act. That is, if the legislature is going to be making decisions about assisted suicide, that's where it would be done, not based on the framework for how we provide public health services in Oregon, which is what this bill is dealing with.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would just have to give you an illustration. The intent of our secondary land use bill in 1993 was not to have 40 acres and $40,000 limitations or $80,000 and 80 acres, and that got in there. So in spite of intent, in spite of what it said, it got in there. And the longer I'm here, the less I'm interested in allowing something to go through that has definitely got major concerns from both sides without getting it pretty well ironed out in the bill before we pass it.
Just a second. Grant, let's go back to the wording and to the amendment that you have before you in line 3, adding the words "or health care provider." Now, could you explain what the problem is with adding those words? Now, you mentioned that legislative council said it would affect the rest of the bill. I guess I don't understand, and so could you talk about that?
and Senator Morissette, and I may need to go back and discuss this. I'm not sure that this is exact language that was presented last session, so we'll have to go back to Legislative Council. But the way that I read this is that it's saying that nothing in this act may be construed to make anyone provide those services. I mean, I think that's what we're saying in our terms, but in a slightly different way. But legal counsel was afraid that worded this way, it could be construed to apply to other statutes as well. And so people could take this language and say, well, now this applies to the statutes dealing with reproductive health issues, with family planning services. And that is something that we do not want to see happen. And that was the position of counsel, that this could be construed as a conscience clause that went beyond the philosophical statement that we're trying to get across here in this section of the bill.
Well, what about the word individual? You know, what individual, agency, or health care provider? Now, let's talk about individual for just a minute. We discussed the definition of agency.
And, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure exactly what you're asking.
Well,
here.
What is... okay, who would be that individual?
Well, and you really need to ask the you know, proposers of this amendment, but I'm assuming that means any individual, any individual in Oregon.
Or, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm assuming it means any individual, and so it's trying to cover all of the bases with this statement.
Okay, I'm sorry. Looking at the bill, page 2, line 9, it says provide... Okay, no, I'm sorry, line 8. Nothing in this section may be construed to require an individual or an agency to provide specific health services and so on. Now, what this amendment does is adds only health care provider to those first two categories. Now, I guess I'm trying to understand why adding health care provider is a poison pill.
And Mr. Chair, if you're suggesting that in our proposed bill, Senate Bill 145, we say may be construed to require an individual agency or health care provider, if we were to add that language, we'd have no problems with that language. Simply adding health care provider would not upset us at all as an amendment to that bill.
I guess, Mr. Chair, following on the Chair's comments, so you wouldn't have a problem putting health care provider in. So, again, I my question was the same as the Chair. Like, I can't quite understand where this expansion is that creates problems for other parts of the agency. So is it the definition of medical service, treatment, procedure, or prescription as opposed to, what is it, the phrase provide? Because this amendment goes on beyond provide and says make available or make a referral for a medical service, treatment, procedure, or prescription, whereas the language of the bill includes individual or an agency. And then you said we could add a health care provider, and that wouldn't be a problem. But then it concludes by saying provide specific health services. So specific health services, I'm trying to figure out what those are. How these things are related, how we get off track with the amendment. And by the way, the other question is, did LC tell you this, or was it your AG?
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, it was our AG last legislative session when we were dealing with an amendment that I am not sure is exactly like this one. Okay. And actually, I guess my suggestion would be, I don't have any problems with wordsmithing subsection 5 and section 1 to come up with something that is more agreeable. But I think probably the best thing to do would be to take this back to council and see if we can address the issues that have been raised and come back with another suggested amendment.
To add to this while we're at it here, I would guess that probably here your section 5 is in the bill refers only to section 1. This also includes section 2 or 3 in the amendment. Now, does that major change? I mean, that should be have some decision made on it also, I would think, because it includes two other sections of the bill.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, we will address that with our counsel.
Okay. You want to continue on with the rest of the conversation?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair. The second part of the bill, starting with Section 2, deals with the public health assessment side of things. And just a couple of months ago, the Institute of Medicine came up with a follow-up report that was entitled The Future of Public Health in the 21st Century. And this report also echoes a lot of the things from the first report, saying that we do need to have a strong governmental public health system, particularly with the new crisis we're facing, including possible bioterrorism, emerging infections, food safety issues, and the burden of chronic diseases. One of the real messages, though, in this follow-up report is the need, the Institute of Medicine says, to come up with standards for providing public health services at both the state and the local level, and then making sure that we hold ourselves accountable to those standards. And so one of the things that the Institute specifically recommends is coming up with an assessment, a comprehensive and thorough assessment of public health services at both the state and local level. And so that's what this section of the bill does, is it creates an interim committee that has a broad-based representation from academic institutions, healthcare provider communities, from professional organizations, state and local agencies, etc., to provide an interim report. And what the proposed interim committee would be doing would be looking at the public health system. They are specifically charged with, number one, conducting an assessment of local capacity to provide basic health, public health services. Number two, to consider methods for improved policies and structures to increase the effectiveness and efficiency of public health services. And number three, to develop a plan to close any gaps that are identified in local public health services. And again, we think that this is important information, and that the interim committee would then be required to report to the next legislative session on their findings. And we do recognize that, given the current budget situation, that the cost is a significant concern here. We asked legislative council, when they were drafting the bill, to use standard language, which I believe they have, and we are committing to making sure that this would be done within existing resources. We would want to make sure that we have as comprehensive assessment and report as possible, and so we would look for outside funding, and the bill actually states that we can look for and accept those funds. And another reason why we would like to see the framework that's in Section 1 adopted is because there has been a lot of work done around that nationally recognized framework. There are a lot of performance measures for each of those essential services of public health we would then be able to use in that assessment process. And then I just close with the fact that we do know that there are going to be at least three amendments, actually now four amendments, with the one that was put in front of me. The Conference of Local Health Officials would like to propose two amendments. One is to make sure that there is joint governance of this process, so it really is a state-local assessment and report that's provided back to the legislature. And secondly, they again want to make sure that the assessment is not providing an unfunded mandate upon them as well, and we would accept both of those amendments. And then the third amendment that I'm aware of is Portland State University would like to be specifically mentioned as having a representative on the interim committee. We want to have academia actively involved, and since they do have a school of community health, we think that this makes sense as well. And with that, I'll close and be happy to answer further questions.
Yes, Senator Minnis.
Doctor, help me understand it. This is constructed with a number of members. You've got one appointment by the Speaker of the House, one by the Senate President, and then a whole bunch of other individuals who are not elected officials, so private citizens, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But when you get to the section about the interim committee by official action may recommend legislation recommended by the interim committee must indicate that it is introduced at the request of the interim committee. So what we're doing is granting to this civilian group the power to introduce legislation. That concerns me to some degree. I would wonder why we wouldn't go through the interim health services committee, where you have an elected body of members introducing legislation, which is the ordinary process.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, that would be acceptable to us as well. Like I said, we asked legislative council to draft standard language. We do, in fact, really the one of the main purposes of this bill is to get the legislature actively engaged in looking at public health, and we that's therefore did want this to be, you know, a legislative committee or a committee that somehow is linked to the legislature, and do want to have active legislative participation. And whether or not the committee had actual power to propose legislation or came through an interim committee on health and human services, either way would be fine with me.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Comments? Okay. Jeff Davis.
For the record, my name is Jeff Davis. I'm here representing the Coalition of Local Health Officials, and I'm also the public health administrator in Marion County, in addition to being the mental health and substance abuse director as well. Dr. Higginson has actually shared with you the two amendments that we were talking about, and I think you have a copy before you. Our suggestion would be under Section 2, where it says there's created the Interim Public Health Assessment and Improvement Advisory Committee, that the additional sentence be added: the Department of Human Services and the Conference of Local Health Officials will jointly manage the process of convening the Interim Public Health Assessment and Improvement Advisory Committee. The second amendment we were talking about has been talked about extensively already, which you would not be surprised coming from local government, and that is we're not looking to have more additional mandates placed upon us that aren't funded in some particular fashion. Our suggestion, but there may be other ways in which you would choose to address that, our suggestion was that under Section 1, there would be a paren 6, which would say nothing in this act is intended to be an unfunded mandate on local government. There clearly may be other ways that you wish to address that, as you've had a previous discussion on that. The last comment I would just make is that I think in these times that we're going through, the idea of not only looking at a different array of principles and elements on how public health services are delivered, but looking at what are we doing well, what aren't we doing well, where are the gaps, is probably very timely and very appropriate, because I think things are beginning to change in terms of what public health responsibilities are, and now is a much better time to take a look at that and begin to chart us in a direction that addresses some of those changes in the future. And in that sense, local public health departments would enjoy being a part of supporting that particular process. I'll stop with that and see what questions you might have.
Thank you. Questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
As I read it, the Conference of Local Health Officials is listed as having a membership on here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, that is correct.
So why would they be involved in the process of determining when you'd meet or the process of convening and all this kind of stuff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, the Conference of Local Health Officials is a statutory advisory group to the Health Services section of the Department of Human Services. And at least historically, we've seen ourselves as being partners in developing, planning, and implementing public health services throughout Oregon, both at the local level and the state level. And it is our belief that that partnership is well represented if, in fact, we're at the table helping convene this particular process, which has a significant impact on each county health department. And that's why we're proposing that amendment.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I get a little curious because some of the things that you proposed here in Marion County with the group homes and some things like that have been very, 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 how should I say, heavy-handed and expensive to people involved. And I guess automatically see a red flag shoot up here when I see potentially the situation arising where the Department of Human Services and the public health group might desire to call meetings and things like that, and might have them delayed or fooled around with or complicated by a group that, I'll be honest with you, at this moment I don't have a lot of faith in some of the action that apparently some of the leaders of that group have done in the past.
Chair Senator Fisher, if I look at the membership of this group, it would appear to me that the single representative from that group would probably not have an overriding influence if the other members were opposed to a position taken by that single individual.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I don't see that this amendment refers to the single individual on there. I see that it refers to the whole group as a whole, telling the board or the public health department when they can't hold their meetings and basically what they have to do in their meetings, it looks like to me.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, I don't think if that's how the amendment is being perceived, that is not the intent of the amendment. The amendment is intended to have shared responsibility in terms of assisting this process to move forward on the part of both DHS and local public health departments. It is not intended in any way to interfere in, stop, block, or in any other way make this process not be a positive outcome.
Yeah. I'm going to need a little more convincing on that one.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair and Senator Fisher, if I might add, the reason why we would be accepting of this amendment is because, as Jeff Davis said, we in public health, do see ourselves as a state-local system. We do not, at the state level in general, provide services that we rely on local health departments to be the local service delivery arm for the public health system. And consequently, we really would approach this, whether it's in statute or not, we would make sure that they were a real partner in whatever work was being done, and therefore are accepting of the amendment.
Other questions, comments? I'd just like to say before you step down that I really appreciate your being here. I very much like this bill. I very much liked it last session. When it was introduced at the very beginning of the session, there was a complete run-through of what the department is all about, and we kind of reviewed all of the services. I don't know that we have to do that at this point, but I would like us to come back and do that, you know, during the session when we have some time to revisit how you deliver services and what, you know, with the Homeland Security issue and with bioterrorism, that does complicate things. But I know that we talked before about the vaccine crisis that we almost had 2 years ago when the vaccine was delivered late and who had the authority to call an emergency and under what circumstances and, you know, whether or not the U of O football team should be the first ones vaccinated or whether or not the private sector should get the vaccine to distribute on their own when there were other people who needed it. And all of those things are really important. And that was kind of the context that we heard this bill the first time. And to me, it makes perfect sense that we do have some kind of a preamble and policy statement and so on. But as we are all finding out, it's not that simple always to understand what words mean and intent and implications and so on. And so we will continue to work on this. And we do have some others who will testify concerning the amendments, and then we will come back and we'll work on the amendments and try it one more time. Last session, it took from the very first of the session to the very end of the session before we finally got it kicked out, and then we complicated life by adding a completely different measure to it, which caused it to fail. But we did succeed in passing it out of the House with this wording, basically. So thank you very much for
you're welcome. Thanks again.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. Do we want? Okay, Dr. Wallach.
I know. It's like looking at a wall.
Yes, Dr. Wallach. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm here today to...
Okay, identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Lawrence Wallach, and I'm the director of the School of Community Health at Portland State University. Okay. And it's my first opportunity and privilege to talk before a body of the state legislature, so I appreciate that very much.
Thank you, and welcome.
My purpose today is to respectfully request that the Senate Bill 145 be amended to include representation from the School of Community Health at Portland State University as part of the advisory committee. The School of Community Health has a great deal to offer, I think. I've been here at Portland State for 4 years. Prior to that, I was at the University of California at Berkeley for 25 years in the School of Public Health there. The mission of the School of Community Health has to do with training professional-level public health practitioners in the state of Oregon, and increasingly, people out there have an MPH degree, a Master's of Public Health degree, from our MPH program. It's a program, by the way, which is done in conjunction with Oregon Health and Sciences University and Oregon State University. We also conduct policy-related and community-based public health research, which I want to just come back to in a minute and talk about, and we provide extensive service to local, state, national, and international agencies as well. So we have a great deal to offer in terms of the diverse experience we have in public health, and I think our commitment to the health of the citizens of Oregon. In terms of service, we have a representative on the Governor's Council on Physical Fitness and Sports, and I've had the pleasure of serving along with the chair, as a matter of fact, on the Governor's Task Force on the Alcohol Industry. We also have people serving on the OMPRO, which is the federally designated quality improvement organization for the Medicare program in Oregon. Since being here in Oregon for the past 4 years, I've had the honor of serving on three different Institute of Medicine committees having to do with communication for behavior change in the 21st century, another committee having to do with the consequences of lack of health insurance among the population, and a third committee having to do with how we can better use public health and behavioral research to capitalize on opportunities for improving the public's health. Other faculty members have consulted to the World Health Organization, various foundations in the country, various national health agencies, and so forth. In the past 4 years, we've conducted about somewhat over $4 million in research and service projects. The research projects have focused on issues having to do with aging, health policy, mental health, alcohol, tobacco, substance abuse in general, environmental health, renal cell carcinoma, breast cancer, social epidemiology, violence prevention, health communication, children's health issues. We did an analysis of anthrax and the way that anthrax from a health communication perspective was being presented in the newspapers. We've also done some work on suicide and leukemia. We really have a very broad background. One of our faculty members recently was awarded a Fulbright Award to study health systems issues in Canada. I myself was one of the first five people the first year that the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation provided a national award for innovators in substance abuse prevention, which was a career recognition award, and I was in the first group of people to receive that. So we feel we have a great deal to offer. We feel this is an enormously important bill and something that we would just love to participate in. We're very pleased that the health division is very interested in having us participate, and I'll leave it at that and see if there's any questions.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Any questions for the doctor? Okay. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Okay, Bob Castagna, please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bob Castagna, representing the Oregon Catholic Conference, which is the Public Policy Office of the Archdiocese of Portland and the Diocese of Baker. First time testifying this session, and we return to an issue that at least was before the legislature last session, in which we had engaged in conversations with the then Health Division. Dr. Wasserman at the time was the administrator, and we also discussed with staff. Our purpose in bringing these amendments to you today, and I think you have already had them and seen them before the committee hearing began, was for purposes of clarification, we're dealing with, in the bill, a public health policy. And there are many undefined terms in Senate Bill 145, and I'd like to take you through them. In subsection 1, on line 5, we have the words public health system, undefined. As we go down on lines 7, 8, and 9, the public health system also responds to public health emergencies, assists communities in recovery, and these are undefined words, strives to ensure the quality and accessibility of public health services. Public health services is undefined. We go to the next lines, 11 and 12. State and local governmental entities have the responsibility to ensure that a public health system is in place to perform public health activities. Words undefined. 13, the Department of Human Services is the state public health agency responsible for overall coordination and monitoring of the public health system. Lines 17 and 18, administrators of local public health departments are responsible for the delivery of public health services and for the coordination of public health services at the local level. 19, 20, 21, the public health system based in state and local governments collaborates with other agencies, undefined terms, private health care providers, undefined terms, community-based organizations, etc. We go down to lines 23 through 24. The primary functions of the public health system are to assess the health of communities, to develop policies to improve the health of communities, and, critical phrasing, to ensure, this is at the end of line 23, page 1, to ensure that quality public health services are provided to the communities of the state. As we look at page 2, and we get into subsection D, ensuring that quality public health services are provided to communities includes enforcing laws and rules that protect public health and ensure safety, undefined terms, linking people to needed health services, facilitating the provision of health services when they are otherwise unavailable, ensuring a competent public health workforce, and evaluating the effectiveness, accessibility, and quality of community health services. Then we get down to the critical language in subsection 5. Nothing in this section may be construed to require an individual or an agency to provide specific health services or to mandate state or local agencies to implement unfunded programs. If you look at the amendments in Senate Bill 145-1, nothing in section 1, 2, or 3 of this act may be construed to require an individual, an agency, or a health care provider to provide, make available, or make a referral for medical service, treatment, procedure, or prescription. This is fairly straightforward language, followed by a definition of health care provider. And the purpose of this amendment is to make sure that in a statement of public health policy, nothing in this language is going to go awry in terms of how anyone may construe it or interpret it, be it an agency, be it the judicial branch of government, etc. That's the whole intent and purpose of this. And if you look at the language, the expansion of the language that's contained in the original printed version, we specifically have in here the language of make available or make a referral. This same issue arose with the division last session. And I have a draft, House Bill 2267, the -5 amendments. We had an individual, we had a health care provider in there, or an agency to provide, make available, or refer. So this issue of provide, make available, or refer is in its second go-round before the legislature. And we consider it to be rather critical language. The State Health Division and the delivery of services has gone on for years without there being a public health policy. The fact of the matter is, despite the good intents of everyone here today, no one truly knows how this language might be interpreted or applied by an agency or by the judicial branch of government down the line. This is intended to clarify and to make sure that no unforeseen consequences occur as a result of this language.
Senator Minnis.
So, Bob, if I help me understand this. So you're concerned about the language because it's a little loosey-goosey, which is kind of the essence of a policy statement. I mean, in fact, that's what this is supposed to be, is a mere policy statement. Can you tell me where a policy statement, a general preamble to a law, has ever caused harm to one of your interests or those that you might represent, or it's just policy, a policy statement or a preamble to a policy law? Because I don't see that this has an effect of law at all, that section one. I just...
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, in and of itself, it may not have effect. I may take a contrary position to a previous witness who talked about whether or not this might provide a foundation for a cause of action. I might take a very different viewpoint to that issue.
Argue that for me. Help me understand. How would you argue this if you can argue it to the court that this somehow provides a...
No, I'm not intending to represent someone whom I don't represent. I am concerned about the language that talks to linking people to needed health services, evaluating the effectiveness, accessibility, and quality of community health services. Mm-hmm. I am concerned about language strives to ensure the quality and accessibility of public health services. There may be certain communities in the state which voluntarily choose to refrain from providing certain health care services that are legal in this state, which a community chooses not to provide.
Okay, so, but then that gets us to subsection 5.
Which is not, in my opinion, Senator Minnis and Mr. Chair, is not broad enough.
Not broad enough or not,
right.
not clearly defined enough?
No, it's not broad enough. The language is limited to providing. It is not expansive to make available or refer.
So making available or referring, you wouldn't
critical,
consider to be
critical,
part of providing?
Verbs.
So, could I ask the question first, if you don't mind?
Sure.
So you don't consider making available part of providing?
I don't.
Or making a referral part of providing? You consider that to be separate?
Yes.
How?
Providing, Senator Minnis, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, providing may be an individual health care provider or an institution actually servicing a patient with that particular requested service. Mm-hmm. Make available, as distinct from provide, might be you are required to provide a room for certain activities to take place in. This is not part of your facility, but the state says you will make a room available for certain activities to occur in. Mm-hmm. And that is the distinction that I would draw between provide and make available.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Worst case scenario. Let's talk about assisted suicide and a hospital that does not perform or allow that to happen in that hospital, and a member of the family who wants to accommodate the person who is seeking that, who's dying, would file a suit. And do you think that there's anything in this bill that would support their filing the suit based on the language in this bill? Make available, provide. Are you saying that then they would say, well, you're not making available or providing this service, therefore you must do it? Is that what you're getting at?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am concerned because these terms are undefined and it is creating a statewide public health policy for the state of Oregon. I am concerned about attorneys who are very creative in terms of how this potential policy could be used.
Senator Minnis.
I wonder if we could ask legislative counsel to respond to the committee and help us understand a little bit more what a policy statement of law does in terms of rights and privileges.
Do you want them to say?
I'm sorry?
Do you want them to say now?
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
In the meantime, let me put it just real personal. I get a call one day from an attorney wanting to have my nurses administrate an assisted suicide dose. It violates everything in my conscience. I'm not a person that has the money to fight a test case all over the country. I told him that our facility was not for that. if he wished to, and the VA hospital was right there, he's a VA patient. I said, you can go over to the VA hospital to accomplish this. It was rather interesting because the person involved was of fairly clear mental ability. He preferred our facility to the other one, and he preferred our help as his family. I'm caught in a terrible situation here of having to be put on the spot, not knowing. None of these things have been tested. My nurses are all, you know, saying, we don't want any part of this.
Right.
If I'm in any way compromised in this type of a thing, it puts the individual person who has standards and things that he's lived by all his life in a situation whereby you are caught between having to try to defend yourself and trying to work through a situation where there's no coverage. And it's not a pleasant place to be in. And this attorney used every kind of a tactic without being threatening my physical body. But I just took a stance and said, no, I said, we will cooperate and help the gentleman get back to the VA hospital. If they're willing to do it over there, that's their business, and it can be done there. I don't know whether the good Lord was looking out for me or for him or whatever, but the person passed away in the process before they got that far. And it disappeared into thin air without going any further, but I'll guarantee you that I didn't do much sleeping for a few nights.
Yeah.
Just that I don't wish to put other people in that kind of a position.
Senator Dominguez.
Well, again, I'm trying to sort out the issue because, again, I'm trying to focus on the policy statement of this bill and what the effect of law would be with respect to a policy statement. And I guess that's the language we're discussing here, as opposed to physician-assisted suicide is, in fact, a law enacted by the people, whether I agree or disagree with it, and how it applies to various, you know, healthcare facilities, I don't know. But this is a policy statement. What I'm interested in is, to what extent does a policy statement give rise to a cause of action or, you know, a legal argument that's going to provide a right or benefit to someone that they wouldn't otherwise have? And that's why I want legislative counsel to come down.
Charlie Keek is here, and we will hear. Charlie, you want to start up? And Bob, just a brief response.
Mr. Chair.
Legislative counsel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you go back and look at House Bill 2267 last session, which also started off solely as a public health policy and then was amended later in the session to include an A-engrossed version, the division at that time agreed to Section 2 of the bill. I'm assuming that they agreed because it's in the language of the bill, and the bill advanced further than that with other amendments dealing with therapeutic measures for treatment of reportable diseases. But the language in Section 2 last time, in 2267, the A-engrossed version, nothing in the framework for the delivery of public health services set forth in Section 1 of this 2001 Act requires an individual or an agency to provide specific health services, to mandate that state or local agencies implement unfunded programs, or to preempt the responsibilities and authority of health professional regulatory boards. So both last session and this session, the state has conceded the verb to provide. What they have not conceded in the form of legislation which they have accepted are the verbs to make available, or to make a referral, or to refer. This issue, and the language that you have before you, involves constitutional issues of freedom of religion, freedom of conscience for individuals, agencies, and health care providers. It's that serious. And the issue then is, why is a division willing to concede to provide, but not willing to concede to make available, or to refer, or to make a referral for? The language of this amendment concerning these constitutional issues of freedom of religion and freedom of conscience is restricted to this act. It doesn't apply to everything in the ORS regarding health care policy. It's restricted to this act and this statement of public health policy.
I don't know if there has been a ruling by the Supreme Court that grants institutions a conscience. Individuals, yes. Institutions, I don't know.
Mr. Chair, we had that argument last session. And whether or not we are talking about medical ethics, or we're talking about legal ethics, or we're talking about businesses and institutions and corporate practices, there are ethical parameters and boundary lines that institutions choose not to cross.
Okay. Thank you. Charlie.
Question?
Yeah. Oh. Why are you here, Charlie?
I was drafting a bill.
Oh, I thought you were just going down the hall. Why did we call? Who wanted to hear? Oh.
Senator Minnis.
Legislative Go for
Council
it.
In here.
Well, I think, Charlie, you heard part of what I said.
Yes, I've been listening.
The issue of policy statements, the effect of those things in terms of providing a right or a privilege that the legislature wouldn't intend in a subsequent lawsuit.
Thank you. Chair Morissette, Senator Minnis, just for the record, I'm Charlie Cheek, Deputy Legislative Counsel. As the office is aware, there have been three attempts in the last 25 years to somehow create a legal obligation to do something or act in a particular way resulted on a policy statement, and all three of those attempts failed once they were litigated. The court saying that it does not create a legal obligation to act or do something. It's our position that a policy statement really isn't a traditional law because it doesn't instruct someone to do something or prohibit them from doing something, which is, of course, what law should do. It is also our position that policy statements really don't belong in the ORS for that very reason.
Mr. Chair.
Before we... Yes.
In light of that, how expensive were those for the people that were trying to protect themselves in litigation?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, you said there have been three cases where apparently this was taken to court. How expensive? What did they cost the people to try to defend themselves?
These, as my understanding is, and I don't have the details, I just spoke briefly to Greg Chamoff about them, it was people trying to say that they had a right as a result of a policy statement for something to happen. Yeah, so they were going forward to it. It wasn't somebody trying to make them do something.
But somebody had a defensive position. What did it cost them to defend it?
I have no idea, Senator.
It would have to have been a time-consuming and expensive process, and that's what we're saying. We don't... Why should we be putting people in a position to have to defend themselves from something or even approaching it? If it's happened three times in 25 years, it'll probably happen 10 times in the next 25 years.
Well, I was going to ask Charlie, I'm looking at a legislative council guideline regarding statements of intent, et cetera, and under rule number three, which the first two says don't use them, rule number three, place a statement in the bill's preamble so that the statement will not appear in the permanent code. Now, how would we accomplish that?
Essentially, Senator, what we would do is we would create a preamble for a bill, which is above the whereas enacted line, and a preamble is not law.
And then it's clearly
It's
not.
Clearly, as a matter of legal interpretation, it is not part of the law. And the court would not look at that preamble until they got to the issue of legislative history, and then it becomes part of the legislative history. It's not a legal part of the law itself.
So that is one way, Mr. Chairman, to accomplish this. It would still appear but not have the effect.
Yes, sir.
Clearly.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that clarification because I've always kind of looked at this as a preamble to what the Public Health Department is all about, and I do think it has a place in the statute if it is written as you suggested, because that if you're interested in the statute concerning the Public Health Department, this is very important, I think, to state what the purpose of the Public Health Department is all the way down. So I would argue that as a preamble it would be valuable, and that would eliminate, I think, then some of these suits. Mr. Castagna, did you have a...
Well, Mr. Chair, I am concerned also about the possibility for administrative rules, and I don't know where the agency could take administrative rules. I don't know that the threshold has been crossed, and the essential threshold for legislation is there's a problem out there that needs to be fixed. What is the need for the legislation? The justification of need should be a justification that every bill passes. Why is there a Section 1 of this bill that is even necessary?
Yes.
Again, a point of clarification. Administrative rules derive from the language of a statutory law. Is that correct or not?
From an authority, yes, sir, both Senator. From the authority granted to the agency to enact administrative rules. And most agencies have a very broad rulemaking authority as it is.
Would they take that from a preamble, like suggested in rules?
I can't really speak to that. I think you would have to ask the agency in regards to how they approach the rules they enact. But their legal authority to enact rules is usually quite broad.
But it has to have an origin somewhere. That the
statute, yes, it's in statute, absolutely. If we went, I could find a statutory authority for, which is now Human Services, to enact the rules necessary to implement the purposes and policies or programs in the department.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Further questions or comments? Dr. Higginson? Yes.
Are you referring to the council or to the person testifying? I would like to address the person testifying with an issue before we know.
You may, Bob Gaston.
Bob, you've provided a kind of a definition here of the healthcare provider. Would that be construed to be going down as far as community-based care, i.e. the assisted living, the adult foster care home, and other levels of care?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, if a health care provider includes a health care facility, I haven't looked for an expansive definition of health care facility in the statutes, but I would think if that is a fairly well accepted definition of a health care facility, that would include the type of facility that you mentioned.
The reason I wondered, Mr. Chair, is that I would not wish to leave out some of the folks less are able to defend themselves from financial status or other things that are involved in the healthcare arena.
Okay. Would we need a definition of healthcare provider in this bill as well? I mean, Yes,
sir. Okay. Chair Morissette, if you want health care provider to include, as Senator Fisher indicated, what was the local health care provider?
Well, they have what they call community-based.
Community-based, yes.
Is below the level of the nursing home.
Our suggestion would be that you clearly state that in the list of things that we have here.
Because the
rule of interpretation would be what does a healthcare provider mean by the plain words? And if that's not clear, then they're going to look to other definitions for guidance in the statutes, but it wouldn't be binding on the court necessarily.
The reason by the very name it's adult foster care, mm-hmm. not the word health is not necessarily in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and from that standpoint, also with assisted living and stuff, is different than a nursing home or something. It actually has a medical terminology with it. And not only that, Oregon has shown itself to be a leader for its own various reasons, not just necessarily to accommodate folks as best they can, but there's been the monetary tendency on the part of the state to encourage this type of thing. I don't see that quitting. And from that standpoint, I would want some type of situation here where all of a sudden, a generic statement about any group involved in taking care of the declining years or the disabled years of our human citizenship here in the state of Oregon, because we've proved here in the 35 years that I've been involved in the healthcare situation that we've got a whole bunch of new definitions and things coming up all the time of different levels of this and that and the other, and it goes by different names and one thing and another, and I would hate for somebody always to come up and say, well, you're not in the law, so we got to revisit the law and put them back in it. It's similar to the meat industry when we used to have to revisit it every time somebody decided they wanted to eat bison or horses or whatever the case might be. And so I would hope that we could get a generic enough definition with this healthcare provider that it would cover basically the future in any situation where someone was being cared for when they couldn't care for themselves.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Any other comments?
I would just respond to Senator Fisher, Chair Morissette. Senator, the only thing I would suggest as a drafting technique would be to, we could look at other places in the statute where healthcare provider has been defined in other statutes and see if that definition serves the purposes of the amendment or of the requester, and then use that definition as saying healthcare provider as defined in ORS.
Oh.
If
okay.
that worked.
That could include the home healthcare provider. I mean, there
perhaps
are new
we
definitions.
Would have to research that. And
I think that would be great to refer to other parts of the statute to include in the rather than trying to spell out a whole lot of things. Say, you know, cite other statutes. Thank you. Thank you both. Dr. Higginson, did you have a response? I don't know. We'll do one more. Anything here?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would like to respond in that hearing the discussion, I think what I'm hearing is the committee would like to make sure that if we were to adopt this bill, that it was clear that the Section 1 was a policy statement or a preamble, and that is clearly what our intent was. So if it turned out to be a preamble and not actually part of law, that would be fine with me. It would also be fine with me if there was language added that in no way does this section grant anybody specific rights or cause for action. That again would be language that would be okay with me, because what I think I hear the committee saying and what our intent was to use this as this philosophical framework that we can build on, but it does not confer anything in the way of rights or specific law. And I do think if we move forward with the assessment, which I really would like to see us do, I think that it's this kind of framework that the committee should be using in doing that assessment and improvement plan.
We will move forward with the assessment. And Bruce Bishop, would you like to come up and testify, please? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering if there are any more problems with a simple little bill.
I don't know. I think, this is the best attempt that I've heard to deal with this bill, having gone through the House session last time when we did a lot of things to it. And Bob, I appreciate your input. Thank you.
Bruce. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Bishop. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. Concerning Senate Bill 145, as we reviewed this bill, we were considering raising many of the questions that the committee has already discussed. And then at lunch, I had the privilege of being downstairs, and I learned that the state public health officer actually eats downstairs.
Good news.
I thought that would be of interest to the committee, and I wanted to bring that to your attention. For all of us, if you do eat downstairs, it's good to know that Dr. Higginson will eat there as well. And I'm going to focus my testimony just to express our interest in this bill. On page 2 on line 23, there is specific mention of the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, and we appreciate that recognition from the bill. I don't want to belabor all of the other issues and discussion that the committee has had. There are two points that have not been discussed that I'd like to raise for later discussion. One will be a discussion with Senator Minnis to have him explain to me on page 2, line 8, where it says nothing in this section may be construed, how that differs from a statement that would say this section may not be construed. Because as I understand the rules of drafting and statutory construction, there may be a difference.
That's a good question for legislative counsel.
Thank you, Senator. And secondly, I would raise a question as to why an emergency clause is appropriate on this measure.
Why it is appropriate? Because it's been so long in coming.
Thank you very much.
They're both good questions, and thanks for raising them.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I think part of the answer with respect to the e-clause is it requires appointment of the members within 30 days, okay. Sine die. So we'd have to have an e-clause to make that happen.
Pardon me? By July 31st.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Senator Fisher.
I just had a question, I guess. Maybe of Senator Minnis, if it's possible to... because of his experience.
Senator Minnis, are you willing to answer his question?
I'll try.
That gives me an open to ask anything I want here.
Now, oh.
In the appointments here, again, you know, we deal with a lot of appointments with Senate confirmation. And I notice this is a Senate confirmation, that it comes directly at the appointment of the Director of Human Resources. And I'm not sure that it might not warrant a little bit of oversight in that process by the Senate.
Senator, are you suggesting that these members should be?
I was asking if you had any, you know, advice as to whether we should trouble the Senate with having to look over these extra things, or whether we should just allow one single agency head to appoint the bulk of the committee.
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. I think I think that might be something that the chairman might want to explore. There may be some other methodologies for doing that. Clearly, that particular individual has a lot more authority to appoint than the Senate President and the Speaker of the House, so you may want to dovetail those appointments to either with the approval of one or both presiding officers, or with Senate confirmation. Senate confirmation would create some time lag issues and some fundamental process. They wouldn't have to go through the rules process, et cetera. I don't see a necessity for that. But, it's up to you, buddy.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, with that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 145, and we will open the public hearing on Senate Bill
192. Mr. Chairman of the Committee, Senate Bill 192 modifies membership on the local public safety coordinating councils and requires that a public health director and mental health director be appointed to those councils.
Okay, Ann.
Thank you, Chairman Morissette and members of the committee. I'm Ann Brand, Administrator of the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services, Department of Human Services, and I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 192. Senate Bill 192 makes an important change in ORS 423.560. Currently, Section Paren 1 and Paren Paren E and Paren list the membership of the Local Public Safety Coordinating Council, Paren LPSCC and Paren, as comprised of, quote, a health or mental health director, close quote. Senate Bill 192 changes this to read, quote, a health director, comma, a mental health director. This change will ensure the participation and membership of the local mental health director on the local public safety coordinating council in order to plan effectively for a safe and productive community. Given the magnitude of issues related to mental health and public safety, it is of vital importance that each county local public safety coordinating council include input on the needs of persons with mental health disorders who have come into contact with the public safety or judicial system. Many counties already include their mental health director on this committee, but this change will ensure their involvement and input. There is no fiscal impact to this change, and I may acknowledge Senator Morissette for serving in an ex officio capacity on the Lane County Local Public Safety Committee. Fundamentally, that's the only change we're looking for here, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to provide this testimony and be happy to answer any questions I have with me at the table. Jeff Davis, who is the administrator for health for Marion County, including health, mental health, and alcohol and drug services, in case you have some questions with regard to any impact this might have locally.
You're here to answer questions, Jeff, is that it? Okay, any questions concerning this bill?
Good bill should pass.
Any other? Okay, we'll close the public hearing then and open a work session. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 192 to the floor of the Senate with due pass recommendation unamended.
Okay, we've got a motion to move Senate Bill 192 to the floor of the Senate with the due pass recommendation. Would the clerk call the roll. We need a second.
Under a consent.
Pardon? Well, I could combine the motions. I was going to make that motion next. What was the motion to add it to the consent calendar? I don't know if we could combine the motion.
It doesn't move faster, but we could do that.
That's a continuing debate.
A continuing debate.
Okay.
Let's add it to the consent calendar. And
well, the question is, Mr. Chair, is a parliamentary question as to whether or not I can combine both motions or not. We did this earlier in Judiciary Committee to the Secretary of the Senate. We haven't heard back from her. I would be happy to amend my motion to amend it to also include it in the consent calendar.
So amend it. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second.
Speak to the
need a second.
Motion.
I need a second to these motions.
I spoke to the Secretary of Senate about that very thing
after we did that this morning.
I did. She said, very progressive.
For the deliberative body of the chamber.
Will you call the roll, please? Call the roll.
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Progressive, aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
So do you have a carrier?
Well, we really don't. We're not supposed to have it. We don't need a carrier for the consent calendar, but Senator Minnis will carry the bill. We shouldn't have to do that.
Members of the committee, thank you very much.
So, meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
I know. And we need to, I would like to get the rules in the House so we can consider what they're doing over there and even talk about it.